Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe to the podcast for free on iTunes or on Castbox. Just look for the Leadership Journey Podcast. And you can also leave us a review. This week, Edwin Ewart is back. Edwin is the principal of the Irish Baptist College. As well as talking us through the various stages of his ministry journey, Edwin shares some books that have been helpful in thinking through some of the aspects of ministry and leadership. Enjoy the podcast. Edwin, welcome back. We're going to pick up your story. We left you more or less at IBC in the middle of the 1980s. At a time when you were studying, preparing for ministry, not realizing that eventually you would end up being in the principal's chair, as principal of the college as you are today. I want to talk a little bit about what came next, then the sort of the ministry path, the churches that you worked with, and so on. Talk us a little bit through some of that.
Okay, at the end of second year at the Irish Baptist College in training, I received a call to Letterkenny Baptist Church, County Donegal, and then they were accepted the call and they were content that I would conclude my course at the college.
Yeah.
And so the following summer, month of June, I went to be their pastor. That was 1986.
Yeah. How did they know you?
I'd been up a few times to preach, do a couple of things for them, and it was really on the basis of that. Just got to know them a little bit.
Was there any wrestling in terms of getting a call from them? Was there any wrestling about whether you would go? It's Donegal, so you're actually moving
100 miles from Belfast.
Yeah.
Oh, no wrestling whatsoever. The only church were interested in me, so I. So I took that as a very clear indicator that this was the will of God for us.
Yeah.
It was quite a move at that time. We travelled through Londonderry on, and then into Donegal on roads that really were very poor. The big main road that most people know now on their way through to Letterkenny wasn't in existence in those days, and when you got to the last 4 or 5 miles, it really was incredibly twisty and full of potholes, and you thought, we're never going to get to this place, and eventually we arrived there.
Yeah.
And Letterkenny was a very different place then to the Letterkenny of today.
Yeah.
We were back recently for a 40th anniversary of the church, establishment of the church there. And we were absolutely amazed at the amount of development that has taken place around the town.
Yeah.
And when we were there, there was a shopping centre, there was a Dunn's Stores, there were a few shops up the main street, and not a great deal else. And the little church sits at the roundabout on the way into the town.
Right. So if the church has recently celebrated 40 years, you were going within the first 10 years of the church's existence. So what was it like? Was it small at the time? Was it a small church?
It was a small church. When we went, the membership would have been in the high 20s.
Yeah.
Then a number of other folk, the terrible term adherents, who came along as well. By the time we left the church, there were probably almost 40 in membership. So we built it up a little bit. The Lord had done that. But they were 4 great years. We stayed until 1990 and were very happy there in Donegal. Our two boys were born in Donegal. So I was going to say they have dual nationality, but of course you can be anything you want in Ireland, can't you?
Yeah, double passports.
Yes.
So 44 years, and then you moved back to Belfast.
Yes, I look at that now and I think that was a short sit. And on the way to the 40th anniversary recently, I said to Alison in the car, I feel we didn't stay long enough in Donegal. And yet, when I look back on it, I think a lot happened in those 4 years. A lot happened to shape me. There were a lot of developments in the church as well. And the church in Letterkenny was a great place to cut your teeth. The folk were warm, friendly, welcoming, forgiving. Young pastors make mistakes. It was no difference, no exception to that rule. One of the mistakes I made, for example, which I sometimes tell the students here about, is that I began a series in Paul's letter to the Ephesians in the month of June, and I preached 36 sermons consecutively on Ephesians, and I keep those notes as a rebuke to me, because I thought I was Martin Lloyd-Jones.
Martin Lloyd-Jones might have done 36 in chapter 1.
He'd have done 36 in chapter 1, but it was too long, it was too in-depth. I think a survey of Ephesians would have been much more helpful to the folk and to me, frankly.
Yeah.
I think there is a time to do a more in-depth exegesis, analysis of a passage, exposition. But that was probably not the time to do it. I needed to break it up more.
Yeah,
and I hadn't the wisdom to do that.
Maybe do half the book and then do something in between.
Absolutely.
Just a minute on that. What advice would you give to younger preachers in terms of the length of a sermon series? How long? I mean, you know, somebody preaches through the Book of Mark and takes a year to do it. Is that just too much in one thing?
I think you need to punctuate it. My recommendation is, if you're going to do a lengthy series, and in principle I don't have a problem with a lengthy series, but break it up, take a break for a few weeks or even a month, and do something different. So if you're doing, for example, a Pauline letter, which is going to be more tight exegetically, then break it up by doing something like a character study, or maybe a few weeks on the Psalms. Something to give people a little bit of something lighter. Common sense dictates that, I would suggest.
Yeah, okay. So 4 years, which on retrospect you wonder whether it was long enough. What prompted you to move then?
A call. I had a couple of approaches. The first one that came was the one we pursued, simply on the grounds that I felt it's a mistake to ride two horses, weighing one call against another. So we didn't allow the second one to proceed to a call being issued. But there were two approaches at that time. The one that came from Belfast was the one from Mount Pottinger Baptist Church, was the one that we followed through and felt it was the will of God for us to move. And we did in 1990. On leaving, we thought, we wondered how the little church in Letterkenny would develop and progress from that point. There's always a fear that progress or development that has been made might be somehow reversed or even stunted. And in the mercy of God, Derek Hutchinson came after me and had a very fine ministry over 12 years. And so I think what that says to me, and it said it at that time, still says to me today, is that the church is God's church. It's not ours.
Yeah, that he's well able to look after.
Absolutely.
It when we've moved on. That's right. Yeah. So Mount Pottinger.
Yes.
Quite a different thing then to come from County Donegal into East Belfast.
Yes.
Yeah. What were some of the big differences that you noticed, even in terms of ministry approach that you needed to bring?
Yeah. The context in Mount Pottinger was much more formal. So informality was the order of the day in Letterkenny. Much more formal approach. The very building itself, which was one of the oldest Baptist churches in Northern Ireland, constructed in the 1890s. It was a very churchy type building with choir box at the front and a choir.
Really? There was a Baptist church with a choir,
box. There was a choir, which incidentally I greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
They really helped our singing.
Yeah.
Except it was slightly unnerving when you were preaching to have them sitting right under your nose.
Okay.
One of the members commented on one occasion to me that I was wearing two odd socks. because he could see under the pulpit what was happening. But Mount Pottinger was more formal and yet also very welcoming. We had 6 years there, very happy years. Our daughter was born, I think I mentioned that she was born later, and that was 1994. And we enjoyed the time in Belfast. We formed good friendships there, some of which have lasted to this day. mm-hmm. and also good friendships in ministry.
Mm-hmm. You mean from other churches around? Yes. Yeah. Okay. And what the friendships within the church, the friendships around in ministry. What would you say? And again, it's one of those old pastoral chestnuts, isn't it? Can the pastor or the minister have good friends in the congregation? Or is it better to be seeking friends outside?
I think it's a blend of both.
Mm.
Ancient wisdom dictates that you shouldn't have friends in the congregation. But I'm not sure that that's a particularly biblical idea.
Mm.
And I don't think it's particularly helpful to the pastor or his wife that's the case. We are human, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And if these are folk that we're sharing our lives with, which I think the pastor should be, then surely we ought to have friends in the congregation. Now, the danger, of course, is that we allow personal friendships to influence and dictate ministry direction or strategy in unhelpful ways.
Yeah, I suppose that's why some people would counsel against it.
Yeah.
But as you say, if you're sharing life with people, then I suppose you want to be careful about an overly professional approach.
Yes.
That you're just doing a job.
Yeah.
And these people are, you know.
No, the church is, after all, God's family. It's not an organization. Mm-hmm. It's an organism.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're doing is growing and developing together. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult in that setting not to develop friendships with people.
Mm-hmm.
Probably even more formative with the friendships outside. I think of one person who trained with me, obviously, and that's Leslie Hutchinson. And he and I have maintained a great friendship to this day. And one of the things that was a great inspiration to me at that time was that we would meet for a coffee once or twice a week and just chat through life and ministry. And then he encouraged me to go with him to a conference called the Evangelical Ministry Assembly in London, organised by the Proclamation Trust.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most formative things in my preaching over all the years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you went on a regular basis to that conference?
We went to that for over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, okay. I also remember, maybe on a slightly lighter note, I came across the information a while back that you and your wife and Leslie and his wife at some point last year had been married for a total of 80 years.
Yes.
Yeah. We not ask you to tell us
division
of that.
We're not getting into too much detail, save to say that they're much older than we are.
So 6 years and then another call and another move.
Yes.
Tell us how that happened.
The call to Coleraine came in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Coleraine was my wife's hometown, and for that reason we kind of wondered, would this be the right thing to do?
Had she grown up in that church?
She had grown up in a Presbyterian church in Coleraine, but we wondered, would it be the right thing to do? Her parents lived there, and so there was a certain family attraction to going. Our children would obviously very much have relished the idea of going to be near Gran and Grandad. The church in Coleraine, I preached in it a few times, and we very much enjoyed going there. My predecessor John Hansford had a very good preaching ministry in Coleraine, and when we were up visiting family, we would occasionally have gone to hear John, where I'd have been free on a Sunday, and so we knew the church a little bit, and then they made an approach to me, and eventually, after having done a few midweeks for them, had a conversation or two with them, they issued a call, which I accepted. And then we made the move, and for the first year I was very unsettled.
Oh, why?
That's the obvious question. I think the reason was, as I reflect on it now, the reason was that there was unfinished business in Mount Pottinger. There were some people who were quite ill around about that time. I think of a couple of ladies in particular who had a very serious illness. And it was almost a year before those situations were resolved, mm-hmm. and those two very fine ladies are now in glory. And it meant that although I was in my heart convinced it was the will of God for us to go to Coleraine, when I went, the rest of the family settled very quickly.
Yeah.
My wife and the children.
Yeah.
And I didn't settle easily.
Yeah.
Until after about a year.
Right. Okay. What sort of impact did that have on your ministry then in Coleraine?
I can't recall it having any detrimental effect yeah. on my preaching or pastoral work.
Yeah.
Others would be a better judge of that
sure,
than me, perhaps.
Sure.
But I sometimes think the will of God is something that can be talked about very easily and tritely.
Yeah.
Is the will of God always an easy thing? I'd say no. Mm-hmm. Is the will of God always in advance 100% clear? I'd say, in my experience, not always.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's 90-something percent, mm-hmm. and it's easier looking back to say, that was definitely the will of God
sure.
for me or for us.
Sure.
But there is an element of faith in it, that you step forward in good faith into what you believe God is prompting you and
yeah.
what you believe God is saying. Now, what are the factors in that? Well, there's what Archibald Alexander, for example, first president of Princeton College, calls the outer and inner call.
Mm-hmm.
I think Calvin has the same kind of idea mm-hmm. in his writings. But the outer and inner call, so there's an inner conviction that builds in
mm-hmm.
you that something's right,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the outward call of the church, of
yeah.
God's people.
Yeah.
And where those two things come together,
yeah.
I would add to those the counsel of others
mm-hmm.
is an important factor.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
three, all of them,
three elements.
I think
yeah.
there are three, yeah.
yeah.
And in all of the moves that I made over the years,
mm-hmm.
then I've always talked to people about the moves before they were made.
Mm-hmm.
Said, what do you think about this? Is this a wise thing? Do you think I'm a good fit for that
mm-hmm.
setting?
Mm-hmm.
And I've made those approaches to people in whom I have confidence,
mm-hmm.
people who are older and wiser than
mm-hmm.
I would be.
I think there's good wisdom in that. And one of the things that I thought I might ask, but I don't think I need to now because of the way you've answered this, is the question of whether there are principles that help to determine when you decide it's time to move from one ministry setting into another. As you obviously, from Donegal to Belfast, from Belfast to Coleraine, and then eventually Coleraine to the college. But it's maybe, rather than try to establish some sort of rule of thumb about that, it's probably better to focus on these principles, more general principles of these three elements that come together at the same time.
Yes, I suppose there's an aspect in which you might think of it in terms of good to wait till you're asked. In terms of a move in pastoral work,
that's good,
one
yeah.
factor, but it's not. That's not the crucial be all and end all. There's also sometimes what's called a loosening of the roots.
Yeah, yeah.
So that in one sphere of ministry, you can ascertain that strategies and elements of vision that you've put in place are coming to their conclusion.
Uh-huh.
That there is a juncture you've reached in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example of this more recently. Whenever I completed 10 years in the college,
mm-hmm.
I sat back and had a look at my situation here. Heaven forbid we'd ever finish anything in an uneven number, but 10 years seemed like a good time to actually have a review of
yeah.
where I was in my life in ministry. And I've always had a deep conviction that the local church is the most important thing of all.
Mm-hmm.
So the Irish Baptist College is a resource.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. It's a training institution for the support of the local church. So I've always considered the pastorate of the local church to be the most important aspect of my ministry over the years. So when I'd completed 10 years here, I wondered, should I be thinking about
mm-hmm.
going back into
mm-hmm.
pastoral work in a local church context? But I could get no peace about this. And I prayed about it, thought about it, some discussion with others, I felt under God it was still right for me to be here in IBC. It wasn't because I was in any way unsettled in the work here in the college. I'm very happy here. I'll say a few things in a minute or two about what makes me happy here. But I certainly could reach no conclusion more recently that my ministry here was coming to an end.
And so you stayed.
That's where I stayed.
Because obviously there is that. I mean, you say you're happy here. There was no sense of being unsettled. How would you suggest that people should discern when they're unsettled but need to see a thing through, and when they're unsettled because the roots are being loosened and it is time to move to something else?
There aren't any hard and fast principles for handling that, Alan, in my judgment. I think it depends on the situation. I know of some situations where people have gone through a tough time and it has been suggested to them that maybe it's time they moved on. But they've actually seen the tough time through and have come out the other end of it a much stronger and better person.
Yeah.
And their ministry has taken off from that point.
Yeah.
So it would be too simplistic to say if times are tough, there's an indicator that your roots are being loosened.
I think it's great wisdom in not trying to put a hard and fast rule to it. But I guess that this, you know, that sense of discernment that maybe comes sometimes with the counsel of people who know you well, and the wisdom that comes from
that. I sometimes wish, you know, that I hear people talk about being given a verse. And I sometimes wish that God would speak to me like that.
Yeah.
It has happened to me once.
Yeah.
That I would be pretty sure.
Yeah.
That the Lord gave me a verse for a particular situation.
Yeah.
Just in my daily reading.
Yeah.
But that rarely happens for me.
Yeah.
And so it tends to be for me seeking the will of God is more a painstaking process. One step forward, sometimes two steps back, but eventually working through to a situation where I feel convinced that God's pointing me in a certain direction. But it's always easier in hindsight.
It is always easier in hindsight. It certainly is. There's no question about that. No question about that. So you stayed in Coleraine for 9 years then?
No, 11.
11, I beg your pardon.
11 in the pastorate.
That's my maths are not working.
Yeah, 11 in the pastorate, but we lived in Coleraine for 16.
Okay. Yeah.
So I stayed on in the church there for another 5 years so that my daughter could finish her grammar school education.
Yeah. Yeah. But the college then, you'd mentioned earlier on that while in the pastorate you were doing guest lecturing here at the college.
Yep.
You've become part of the management committee for the college as well.
Yes.
So when did they invite you then to come here in 2007?
Yes.
With a view to becoming principal?
Yes, they invited me to apply for the position of assistant principal to the then principal, Hamilton Moore, with a view to driving the implementation of the new ministry preparation course. That course was devised, the inception of it was back in 2004, and the first rollout of the program was 2008. So I began in 2007 here in the college, and my brief was to drive the implementation.
Had you been involved in setting that program up?
So 2007, seems like yesterday. And then I was assistant principal for 2 years, principal designate for a year. Which was always a title that folk could never quite get their head around, nor could I. So principal designate for a year and then became principal in 2010.
So you've been principal in the completeness of that term for 8 years into your ninth?
Coming 9 years in April.
What you said there are things that you enjoy about the work. What gives you the most satisfaction about your role as principal here?
Interaction with the students.
Okay.
So I would never hesitate to answer that question.
Yeah. How much teaching do you do?
I do a lot of teaching. I'm not a pen pushing principal.
Yeah.
So I think I made that clear to the management committee and the interviewing panel when in 2010, that I didn't want to be sitting behind a desk. A certain amount of that I have to do. We're involved with two universities, and there's a fair bit of administrative stuff to do with that. And I work alongside Nigel Young, the training director, and doing that kind of work, though he does the lion's share of it, of course. But no, teaching in the classroom is my chief joy.
Yeah. And your areas of teaching, a range of things?
Yeah, series of teaching are biblical theology, which is a kind of mix for me of biblical, systematic, and historical. On the grounds that I think you need all three of those disciplines to be a good theologian. So I do biblical theology. I teach homiletics alongside a certain Alan Wilson. And then I do a number of pastoral subjects as well. And I'm very involved in the hands-on sermon class work that we do every week.
Do if you had a favourite bit of all of that teaching, what would it be?
I'd have to choose. I do like the theological stuff, but then I also love the preaching stuff.
And one I suppose is more academic, and the other, while it is academic, has practical outworkings clearly. And you mentioned previously about the way the sort of devotional life and pastoral life of the college operates, so that. You with other tutors will have a group of students that meet for prayer. Are there other ways that you're involved pastorally with students beyond the classroom academic stuff?
To some degree, we're involved with this as a staff, and I'm involved with this as principal. But we have a dedicated position where a retired pastor is pastor to the students, and so Alan Baird is our pastoral support for the students in their lives.
What are some of the challenges that you find in the life, say, of this college, or even looking more widely across the general Bible college world in the British Isles? I know it's not easy, and some colleges have struggled, and it's not been a very easy playing field.
Well, I'm involved on the committee of what's known as the Association of Bible College Principals across in England, and that is a group that meets an annual conference, and then the committee, there's a chairman, I'm the secretary, and a treasurer. We have regular telephone conference calls. Just to talk about the sector, the Bible College sector, and its relationship with higher education. The challenges that we face as a sector are quite significant with regard to accreditation with universities, with regard to funding, number of Bible colleges in England, Scotland, Wales have gone to the wall in recent years, challenges of recruitment. So I think that the challenges are increasing rather than decreasing. One of the issues that we face in our context is the question of residential training or the hands-on in-ministry training that a lot of people are now buying into. So rather than somebody signing up for 3 years of residential training, and I use the term residential advisedly in that what it means in the Northern Ireland setting is that most people travel in every day to college, that we've got five places here for people who want to be resident. But the residential model as opposed to the in-service training model is a tension that we're facing in today's world, and is trying to address that.
And I guess as the residential model maybe doesn't suit so many people, then there are challenges to the ethos of a college.
Yes,
because I think certainly my sense is that there are Bible colleges that have been set up with it, and maybe in the past have been maybe exclusively residential, have had a residential ethos, but as that has changed, it becomes more difficult to maintain the ethos of the place.
Yes, and online courses are becoming very popular today as well.
And you mentioned in service, that would be a big part of what happens here at IBC, the ministry placement, isn't it?
Yes.
Talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, in second year of our ministry preparation program, students go out to be mentored and gain ministry experience as part of their program. Now, it's quite intensive in that they're still supposed to be in college doing their classes, and then take, for example, a guy who's going to be training for the pastorate. He will go out, spend perhaps an afternoon visiting with a pastor, then that evening at their prayer meeting he'll be involved, and then on Sunday he's involved in that church as well. So there's a church other than the person's home church. Now those placements have variety in them. Just some are in churches, some are in mission organisations. We've had a number of people go into schools who are aiming for the religious education trajectory. So that has become a very important part of the training of people at IBC. And then at the end of that year, beginning of third year, there is a cross-cultural placement that students go off to all arts and parts around the world and get experience of what God's doing in another context.
Yeah, I think wasn't there one of the students went to Vevey, which is where Clive Atkinson, who's been recently on the podcast, Nathan Irvine?
They've gone all around the world and they organise those placements themselves, the cross-cultural placements, with the approval of the faculty here.
Yeah, and I guess those placements, not only do they provide a practical context to ground things that they're learning in the college, but presumably for some of the students, they actually become the first steps in finding a door to ministry.
Absolutely.
Is important.
We've seen a number of people gain a foothold in ministry through a placement.
Our time's moving on here. There's still a couple of things that I want to ask you. I mean, one is that you've got a pile of books sitting here on the desk. They're carefully chosen. These are books that you have found quite influential in terms of your own leadership thinking.
Yeah.
Talk us through them. And I'll post these on the podcast notes and on the blog so that people can follow them up.
Okay. I've picked some older books and one or two newer ones that I found influential in my own reading and thinking. The first one I would like to mention is a book by Billy Graham, The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham. And Billy Graham, I've always considered to be one of the best preachers that you could ever listen to. And go on to the Billy Graham Organization website and just listen to some of the old crusade messages. They're absolutely terrific. But this is a book about Christian leadership secrets. One or two gems here. Let me pick this one out. About the qualifications of a leader. He says, the qualifications of a pastor are to have the mind of a scholar, the heart of a child, and the hide of a rhinoceros. little gems like that I've used over the years in teaching students, and I found enormously helpful. So there's that one by Billy Graham.
Is it stuff that's been compiled?
Oh, it's compiled. It's compiled by
Marshall Shelley,
Myra Shelley.
I think it's the price token is covering Harold Myra and Marshall Shelley.
Yes,
published by Zondervan.
Yeah, okay. Zondervan. Okay. Yeah. Then, if I pick the other two more contemporary ones, there is Derek Prime and Alistair Begg's fine book on being a pastor. Mm-hmm. Which is published by Moody Press.
Yeah, It's fairly recent.
I think the date is 2004.
All right, okay, it's older than I thought.
It's 14 years old, but it's still very much current in its thinking. And so Derek Prime, who's in Charlotte Chapel, and Alistair Begg, who's been in the States now for quite a number of years, but of course originating in Bonnie Scotland. This is a great blend of pastoral wisdom about what the pastor is, goals and priorities, prayer, preaching, study, conduct of worship, delegation, family and leisure, mm-hmm. all kinds of...
So very practical.
Very practical very information practical here.
Yeah.
Two different individuals, and yet they combine very helpfully mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. volume. Mm-hmm. And then Albert Moeller, a name that might be familiar to a good many people, a book entitled The Conviction to Lead. He coins this little phrase, which is probably quite American, convictional leadership. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've benefited from over the years in my thinking about the kind of leadership that we ought to exercise.
Yeah.
So a few of the things that I think, and these come originally from Moeller, though I've tried to shape them a little bit for our own setting here. Some of the things that I've tried to build into my leadership here are, first of all, a clarity of vision shaped by Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it comes from the old adage that if you aim at nothing, you're sure to hit it.
Mm.
And so we need to know what it is we're doing and where we're going
mm-hmm.
and how we're going to achieve our goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so that getting clarity of vision. But I add the second part of the clause, shaped by Scripture, mm-hmm. always shaped by Scripture.
Yeah.
Set of convictions, very important about primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So I make that point about primaries deliberately because there are a lot of people that I've encountered in ministry over the years who are absolutely convinced about a set of secondaries.
Right.
And I want to say, whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
It's the primaries that we're convinced about. So I have terrific fellowship with a range of people from other denominational
yeah.
affiliations, and we are agreed on the primaries. Now, in our college context, for example, our faculty team, which I haven't mentioned to this point, but I will now, are a terrific bunch of people, men and women. And we work very happily together. We have a wonderful working relationship. And we're absolutely on the same page with regard to convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And Moeller says, an interesting comment in one place, that if you appoint people to your institution who don't share your convictions,
mm-hmm.
you've sown the seed of its destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
absolutely persuaded about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
What he means there are fundamental convictions. Of
yeah.
course, not secondary issues.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. One of the things I would say, this isn't from Moeller, it comes really, I suppose, from people like John Stott, is lead and don't drive.
Yeah.
He draws this wonderful analogy of the Eastern Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
who's not like the Western Shepherd. The Western Shepherd drives the sheep. But the Eastern Shepherd leads, and people want to follow. And it seems to me there's something very important in that for us, both at a pastoral level and in any theological college.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are on faculty need to be people who are leading and modelling
mm-hmm.
what true ministry mm-hmm. and being a Christian disciple is really like.
Yep.
So I'd mention that one as well. The importance of team.
Mm.
I often say when I'm out on deputation around churches that I could not do this job that I'm in now without the support of a magnificent team.
Yeah.
And so I thank God every day for
yeah.
them. It's absolutely great to have people around you who not only share your convictions, but with whom you can laugh and cry and just share life,
yeah.
Which is great. The other thing is, two other things, if I can mention them quickly, Alan. Passing on to others what we have learned
yeah.
is part of what we're doing here, because we've got a group of people here who are experienced practitioners, both in pastor work and in the
yeah.
mission context. I think that's so crucial
mm-hmm.
for theological educators,
mm-hmm.
that they're not just academics,
mm-hmm.
but they're people who have experienced life and ministry
mm-hmm.
and are passing that on. And then the last thing, by no means the least, is that we're always learning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
at the Irish Baptist College, we think we're doing a good job,
mm-hmm.
but we never think that it couldn't be improved
yeah,
or
yeah.
that there isn't something we could learn from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to be humble enough to recognize mm-hmm. that other people are probably doing it better than we are. Mm-hmm. And if we can learn stuff from them, then we'll try to do that.
So those are some of the things that you've come to see as really important leadership principles.
Yep.
Now, you began by...
Oh, sorry.
You sort of launched off from Albert.
That was from Moore. And then a couple of older books.
Some of those things that you're saying are not necessarily Albert Moore's
no,
ideas.
They're not.
You
no,
sort of
no. The first couple were more from Moore.
A couple of older ones then?
I think it's John Piper who says, let the clean, fresh breeze of the centuries blow through your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I've shared that conviction for many years, that we should read not just the new but also mm-hmm. the old. Mm-hmm. So a mix of both is a good thing. So I have two things here. First of all, Charles Bridges' The Christian Ministry, published by Banner of Truth. And this was first published back in 1890. So it's
same time as the foundation of Mount Pottinger Baptist.
Well, you see, so some great stuff here from Bridges that is surprisingly contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you need to, as you're reading this, and it is easy to read actually, but you do need to update the 19th century language into contemporary context. But just looking at qualifications for leadership, the danger of conformity to the world, considering your own defects,
mm-hmm.
How to preach, composition of the sermon, how to preach the law, how to preach the gospel. Great stuff for pastoral work and also for preachers.
So it's like a predecessor of that book that you mentioned by Derek Prime and Alistair Begg,
It is a bit. It's a little bit more in depth now than their book, but I heartily recommend Charles Bridges.
Yeah.
And then last but by no means least...
There would have to be some Spurgeon.
There has to be a bit of Spurgeon. So this is a synopsis of Spurgeon's lectures to my students,
mm-hmm.
written by a guy called Helmut Thielicke. He's the compiler of it. And Spurgeon is magnificent. Again, 19th century, mm-hmm. got to update the language into the contemporary. But giving advice to students homiletically, you and I, mm-hmm. of course, are interested in this because we're teaching this module. But giving advice to students homiletically and then with regard to character.
Mm-hmm.
So he's riding a couple of horses here. One of the things that I think is particularly striking about Spurgeon's advice to students is his commendation of earnestness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I mentioned this already, but he is steadfast in his promotion of this quality, and then he develops other themes such as the importance of being spiritual, the importance of appealing for decision for the truth, public prayer, our posture in preaching.
Yeah.
Well, we don't often think about that.
Yeah.
We do a little bit of that in our sermon workshop material in college.
Voice coaching and stuff.
Yeah, and demeanor, how we conduct ourselves in the pulpit. Open air preaching, which interestingly one of our outreach teams from the college was involved in Limavady in the past couple of weeks.
Really? Right.
A little bit of that. Working with slender apparatus.
So you don't have a very strong voice or
absolutely.
A strong constitution.
I'm turning the blind eye and the deaf ear to criticism in the pastorate.
Yes, yes.
So Spurgeon.
Good. Well, as I say, I'll put up links to those on the podcast notes that people can follow those things up. One more question for you.
Okay.
Now, okay, you had a big birthday and you're just a few months ahead of me. And well, I know that I'm going to become 60, God willing, in a few months' time. So...
Yeah.
Okay, you're 60. You have the opportunity to talk to the 20-year-old Edwin Ewart, who's a student in Jordanstown. What would be the main piece of advice that you would give to your 20-year-old self that would prepare your 20-year-old self for the next 40 years?
Okay, there's so many things.
Ah.
Can I begin by saying something that maybe is a contradiction of what you might think? Somebody said to me, if you had it to do all again,
mm-hmm.
what would you change?
Mm.
And I thought about that for a minute or two and then said, probably nothing.
Mm.
It is hard to put an older head on young shoulders.
Yes, it is.
And so probably the mistakes I made when I was 28, and I was 28 when I started in Letterkenny, I'd probably still make them.
Mm.
And sometimes we need to make those mistakes in order to help us to grow and form.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that as a kind of qualifier, that there's an expectation that someone who's young in the pastorate in Christian leadership will inevitably make mistakes. That's not to suggest that older folk don't make mistakes, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We still do that because we're fallible and human. But I would say one or two things. I'd say immerse yourself in Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great benefits of the Gospel Hall background, to go right back to the beginning, was the strength of their Sunday school work and Scripture memorization. And so whenever I'm quoting Scripture in class, it's almost always from the Authorized Version,
yeah.
and it comes straight from Sunday school
yeah.
and the Gospel Hall.
Yeah.
So immerse yourself in Scripture, memorize the Bible, read good Christian books. So we
yeah.
mentioned a few of them here, the Old and the New.
Yeah.
Get yourself a good circle of friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And maintain those friendships. One of the biggest fears I have for guys going out into the ministry now is that they will become isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And we're easy prey for the devil when we're isolated. So get a good circle of friends, or one or two who will be with you through thick and thin. I would commend that to the young pastor, young Christian.
Yeah, that's great. Edwin, thank you so much. There's been an awful lot of wisdom that I think will be so helpful to people to think through. So thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure.
And for all that you've shared. God bless you as you continue your leadership here at IBC.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leadership Journey podcast. And thanks again to Edwin for his time. If you'd like to know more about the Irish Baptist College where Edwin works, you can find them on the web at www.irishbaptistcollege.co.uk. Next week, my guest is David Dunlop. David is pastor of Windsor Baptist Church in South Belfast. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, have a good week.